Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. You know, even now, with so much of the truth about the greater reality so broadly known, both mainstream science and mainstream Christianity continue to stonewall it. So this work of helping people to factually answer the ultimate questions of life falls to lay people. Those of us who have ourselves been curious and found our answers will share them with others, who in turn share them with still more people. And so these essential truths are beginning to dawn like sunlight all over the earth. There are lots of people working to bring the light, and counting many of them as my friends is a special joy for me. Most of the best educators in this field are on a mission. They're beautiful, selfless, and full of a love for others that makes it fun to be around them. Many of them who do this work don't write books. They don't go on tours. They really mainly work in their own communities, doing the indispensable work, the gift of bringing the truth to individual people who need to understand what's going on and who couldn't really be helped in any other way. Now, each of the teachers that I've met is a giant. I don't know who else to say it. I've spent time with them, shared meals, stayed in their homes, and I love listening to their stories of what brought them to this work. Our guest today is someone whose special mission it is to support and lead the work of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, or IANS. Chuck Swedrock has been a friend of mine for years, and he is about to become a friend of yours. Welcome, Chuck. I'm so glad you're here.
Well, thank you, Roberta. This is the special work you do.
It's really so much fun. I should pay people just to let me come into their homes and into their cars, wherever we are talking. I just love it. And I'm so glad you're here. We've talked about doing this for a while. Chuck and I met years ago, and we've sort of been in touch intermittently. But one of the things about doing this work is that you don't get to be in touch much. Then I spent some time in January, just a couple of months before we're doing this live show, and with Chuck, stayed in his house, spent time with him, did meals with him, and really came to connect with someone that I want you to know. Chuck, tell us a little about your spiritual background so people will know who's talking.
Well, I have a pretty traditional track. I came up in a fundamentalist Protestant Christian environment. I accepted an altar call as a boy, you know, giving my life to Jesus as a personal savior, and I still count that as a precious moment in my life. But as life goes on, we kind of run into different ways and different means, and I got to be a teenager and felt like the answers weren't working. I could not accept a belief system that had to be taken on faith, and I just kind of left it behind for a while. And then I kind of ran into some bumps in the road after, you know, some events in my life and leading up to a divorce after a 17-year marriage, a divorce I did not want. I had two young children. I felt like it should go on.
Yes. And so what did that brought you to question things, that brought you to turn to God? How did that affect you? Because a lot of people have things happen in their lives like that that they can't control and that really are wrenching and make you feel terrible. So how did it strike you?
I can look back now and see that all of those events had an important purpose in shaping who I am today and in shaping my belief. And they all grew me in significant ways, because at the time it was a crisis, but I can look back in that divorce and say it was one of the best things that happened to me for a growth perspective.
Wow, that's really important to say. I hope everyone listening who is going through something like that can at least see that it is possible to look back after some time and say, wow, that was one of the best things that could have happened in terms of what it, where it brought me, of what my spiritual growth is now. So that's wonderful. But you had, did you have an NDE, a near-death experience yourself, or what drew you to do this work?
Well, I first kind of got an in-your-face exposure to this, literally, having a dentist appointment. Now, going to the dentist was always a little like a near-death experience, but that's meant to be humor. But,
yes.
I was having some fillings replaced, and I showed up, and hygienist prepped me, a little cotton roll, metal clamps, rubber dams. I'm a captive audience.
Yes.
The dentist came and gave me a couple of shots of Novocaine, and he's waiting for those to take effect, and he just starts sharing this story. He'd been furniture shopping the day before and met a salesman who just returned to work after being hospitalized with a cardiac condition. The salesman told the dentist that while he was in the hospital, his heart stopped and they had to revive him with the paddles, and he had this experience of going into the light, meeting beings he recognized as deceased family members. And they introduced him to other beings there that he had no prior knowledge of that were supposedly extended members of the family, deceased, that he had never encountered or heard about. But after he was resuscitated and recovered, he did the research, and he authenticated these identities that he had found in his experience for the first time. Well, I thought this was really gripping, but, you know, like, and I looked up in the hygienist, her face was just rigid with fear. You could tell this was totally outside of her comfort zone. And I wanted to reach out and say, I think this is comforting or good news. This was in the very early 80s, and I may have heard that term probably, near-death experience, but it was definitely not on my, you know, life course at the moment.
Right.
And I was building a family and a career, and man, I had young children at the time, so I had nothing to do but file that away. And it was a seed that later was triggered when other, you know, events came into my life, and I then encountered firsthand knowledge about this kind of event.
Just to give people some perspective, the term near-death experience was actually coined by Dr. Raymond Moody in 1975 in his seminal book, Life After Life. So most people had never heard of them in the early 80s. So you were one of the first people then to become really interested in the phenomenon.
Well, the next major event in my life was my own experience, and probably the seminal transcendental experience for me is August 15th, 1985. I got a call from my dad, who was my stepfather. He became my dad when I was 6 years old. And I just said hello, and he said, he didn't prepare me by saying I've got bad news or, you know, I said hello. He said, David killed himself. David was my youngest brother.
Oh,
and
my.
With that kind of abrupt confrontation with the reality of something, I just broke down and cried.
Of course.
A truly authentic emotional response, which in retrospect was the right thing to do. I mean, in retrospect, I was thinking maybe I should have protected my children from seeing their father lose that troll. But no, I think it was the right thing to do.
Right.
So I put my emotions on control, and I drove the 4 hours back to the family homestead. It was in Pennsylvania. It was 4 hours away. He had come home from a wedding, obviously despondent, and gone to a gun cabinet and got a high-powered rifle. He went up to his bedroom. My parents were in the living room.
Oh, my.
This was very dramatic and,
yeah,
you know, hard to imagine. I mean, the emotions on this kind of thing are obviously, you know, against the wall in terms of what can happen to people.
Right.
This kind of brings us back to the beginning, because that boyhood home where he did this and where I grew up was right next door to the little clapboard rural church, maybe 100 members, very few families, but they poured their hearts out to our family. And that's what church is for, in my mind. That's right. Why it's essential to have that kind of a support system. They poured their hearts out. Before I arrived, they had come and the body was, taken to a funeral home, but they came and they cleaned up his bedroom and took the furniture out and burned it. And, when I got there, they put a picture over the wall where there was a bullet hole. So my process during that week was just kind of being numb and, answering the phone, taking in meals, planning for the services, which were closed casket. And so I didn't really address my own issues until I got home about a week later. And I called my confidant at the time, it was my stepmother, and she says, you need to say goodbye to your brother. And I realized then that I really hadn't done anything more than that initial, emotional reaction.
Yes.
Because you just have to get through these things. So I wasn't really a practicing meditator at the time, but I found some quiet time. I'm alone, and I reclined in an easy chair, and I closed my eyes, and I let the thought go through my mind, goodbye, David. And instantly, my mind, my consciousness was transported back to Pennsylvania, back to the neighboring town where the funeral home was. And this is a little bit graphic. Please bear with me. As I was taken into the back of the funeral home where I had never been physically, and there's a casket sitting on a gurney, and my consciousness was thrust through the side of the casket into the space on the torso where there should have been a face, and it was just an indistinguishable mass.
Oh.
Now, I'm bilocating it as I'm aware of my body back in that easy chair, just thrashing from the horror, the terror, the ghastly nature of this.
Oh, yes.
And at the pinnacle of this experience, I'm alone. A voice, a male voice, came into my mind and spoke three words and said, he's not here.
Yeah.
And then with that, there was total serenity, calm, peaceful. I'm reunited with my body. And then processing that going forward certainly expanded my spiritual horizons.
Wow.
And where I would say where I gave up my fear of death, just putting that into place with all the other things that, come along. But then it also raised a little quandary. It's like, well, wait a minute.
What the heck?
I've got these struggles. They can speak to me in clear English, in plain language. Why? Go on. I want some more answers here. I got other dilemmas, Give me a little tickle here and there. But you get what you need when you need it, in a sense, or it's part of your path.
Yes.
So you can see how that experience really shaped a lot of what happened later. As I said, I went through the divorce after that and then went into divorce recovery, which was a beautiful training ground for dealing with emotions and support groups, which now in this near-death experience are arena, I'm doing support groups, and I got facilitator training back then that, those skills pay off.
Yes.
And I decided I needed some spirituality in my life. So what do? You go back to your roots. And I went to another fundamentalist church. It was a big church, and I had, I really was fed by the spiritual nature of some of it, the music and the quiet time, some of the prayer. But the dogmatism just didn't work anymore. So I was led to a unity church by someone I met, and that really fit with me better at that time. And they said one Sunday, we're going to have this gentleman come and talk to us in 2 weeks. He's in one afternoon. He's going to share his near-death experience. Well, that was it. The seed that was planted from before popped to the surface. And I said, I'm going to be there. And that's where I met a person sharing first person a near-death experience. And that person, and this name will ring a bell, his name was Tom Sawyer.
Yes, yes.
He's not the gentleman from Huckleberry Finn you know, fame. He was a real gentleman, lived in the Rochester, New York area, and he'd been pinned under his truck for 25, 30 minutes and crushed him and squeezed the breath out of him until they got it off and he was resuscitated. But he was one of the ones originally studied by Ken Ring, the founder of IANS, and the book that tells his story is What Tom Sawyer Learned from Dying is a classic in the field. And anyone who can lay their hands on that, they can find it. By all means, grab it.
I'm talking with Chuck Swedrock, who is telling us about the early, sort of the early days of investigation of near-death experiences after the term was coined in 1975. By the early 80s, there were people beginning to study them, and there were early experiencers who became famous. So let's go on talking about Tom Sawyer and what he taught, what his experience taught us.
Okay, yeah, the early researchers, Ken Ring, Dr. Bruce Grayson, Michael Sabon, there's a number of them that were the initial founders of IANS. Nobody would publish their research, so that's where this organization came into being. And so they started publishing their own peer-reviewed academic journal, which we have published now since 1978, faithfully once a quarter.
Wow.
So this is a very solid place to get access to the kind of information. And it's always kind of peeling back the layers of the onions. There's always a little bit more from a different angle as the researchers begin to probe, you know, to greater depths and can do more longitudinal studies. And, you know, it's an important part of the fabric of understanding what this thing of being human means.
We'll do this again, but why don't we now mention to people who are saying, wow, I'd like a little more of that information, how would they join IANS and be able to get that those reports routinely?
Okay. Our website, www.IANDS.org. So it's IANDS. IANDS. We often get confused with IONS. You know, you can understand the similarity. But if you go to IANS, you can join there. The membership levels are at the basic level, and you'll get a quarterly newsletter, and there's always a new experience or two shared in the newsletter called Vital Signs. And they'll have book reports, book reviews, and, you know, because there's a lot of books coming out on the subject right now.
Yes.
But as you go up the levels, there's a professional level, which you need to be at in order to get access to the journal. And then a lot of people who are giving services in this arena will join a professional level to be part of the professional directory so that you have sort of a pool of others. Also, at the professional level, you could access the research base. You can ask for permission to go in and look at some of the, you know, a lot of people will enter in their description and enter questions about their experiences. So there's a research pool there for folks who want to study it from different angles.
It's a very welcoming conversation, is my experience. These are lovely people. And we're going to talk a little later about why it is that so many of them are so lovely and nice. There's a transformation that happens in many near-death experiences that seems to be permanent and quite beautiful. But let's just finish talking about Tom Sawyer a bit. His truck fell on him, and just briefly, what did he experience? He went out of his body.
Well, he had a life review, and that's a very signature part of the near-death experiences. Not every experience has one, at least not in depth. But what his life review was like is complete model of a life review is from three perspectives. You relive the life that you had up to that point in time, and you experience it with all your emotions and every detail. A second perspective is you are everyone that you had interactions with in a significant way. You are that person experiencing you. So if you said something to someone who lifted their spirits, you get to see the reaction, you get to feel it, you get to see actually the if they go on and touch other people's lives, you get the ripple effect. So you get all the benefit that goes with just maybe a casual comment to somebody that lifted their spirits. Of course, there's the flip side.
Yes.
If you did something that was a little depressing or negative or whatever, you get to feel the negative effect that had on that person because you're living it as them. So when you think of a life review, it transforms your thinking about how you interact with others. To think that one day you're going to feel what it was like to lose your temper and see what it was on to be on the receiving end of that.
Or, yeah, I think it makes you really nice. That suddenly you become very nice to other people because you know you're going to get to relive this moment from their perspective. That changes a lot in the way we treat other people.
And the third perspective is that you have all the detail from outside of the event. So, for example, in Tom's experience, he relived an incident when he was a young boy, like, let's say, 10 or 12. His chore was to mow the yard. It's a Saturday morning, and he was dilly-dallying, as young people will do, and his father yelled at him to get it after his chore. And so he's out there rushing through it because he wants to be playing with the friends or whatever. And there were some wildflowers in the yard behind his house that his aunt, who lived in a house behind theirs, asked him not to mow down because she wanted to do a project with the kids or something using those flowers. But he's in a hurry and he sees the flowers and she won't care. And he mows them down. Now he has his life review. He gets to be his aunt discovering that those flowers are, mowed. And her quandary, and should she confront him? And, he wouldn't have forgot, And all that dilemma and all that angst from her perspective, and should she confront him or not? And then eventually deciding to let it go. The third perspective was, he said he could have been a bird up in the tree and looked down on it. He could have been in the yard, in the grass. He could have counted all the bugs in the yard. Total detail is there available in his life review.
Wow. Yeah, it's quite an amazing experience. We should just add that a lot of, wouldn't you say most near-death experiences are quite instinctive to the person who has them. The life review might happen or not. The tunnel might happen or not. Whereas the actual planned death is pretty uniform. We mostly go through the same things. These are very particular private experiences, wouldn't you agree? Quite unique to the person who has them.
These events are significant in people's lives, so significant that there's a transformation with the event. Now, a number of people have had multiple near-death experiences, and we could say that actually the research shows that the true definition of authenticating an experience and its profoundness comes from the after effects. And we could spend a whole show just talking about that.
Right.
Really what I see is that people come back and they have a new reality, but they're still human. So the interesting thing that I've seen from people who have had multiple perspectives or experiences is that each one will change them even more. So, like, they'll come back from the first one and say, that's it. I know now I got the scope of, the human system and what comes after. But then they'll have the second one and say, oh, that's nothing. Now what I know is even more.
Yes.
The total picture. And then they'll have another one, and that will become an even bigger total picture. So
yes.
For me, what I finally come away with, and sometimes it's a struggle talking to them because – they're so convinced of what's happened as the reality, they'll be argumentative. I mean, they're still human.
No. Absolutely.
And many of them still have a very strong ego involved in painting their perspective. Some will come back and they'll become even more religious, or some will leave their religions and go on to a different spiritual, avenue. So my first conclusion is, diversity is absolutely essential to all parts of reality from a human perspective. And I like to say that the principal requirement for this system or this creation is ignorance. And then that causes people to have a pause. They think of ignorance as negative. But some people think of ignorance as the veil. But without that ignorance, there is no experience of discovery. Contemplate that.
Yeah,
Unless you don't know something, you don't know what it's like to have that layer of the onion peeled away. Because time and again, these experiencers tell us they have access to all knowledge. So it's not like in their spiritual existence that they now have the same ignorance that they have here in the physical. Time and again, they tell us they have access to all knowledge. So the experience is why we're here, the experience of not knowing. And the diversity of all the different paths is what makes for human, the richness of the human experience. So when we think of it as conflict, it's actually as it's supposed to be. You know, the constant of ignorance means that it's an apparition to look at the things as good and evil or right and wrong. Because in our spiritual existence, that all disappears. It evaporates, you know, from this ultimate perspective. Now, we could go into what the negative experiences tell us. But really, when you look at them after enough time, you'll see that they really lead around to another transformation. So.
Yes. Yeah, wow.
The biggest drawback to understanding these experiences is they have to be presented in human vocabulary. And if I have to recommend one book, which I think does a tremendous job of structuring it, I think it's a book by the experiencer named Natalie Sudman, S-U-D-M-A-N, and the name of her book is Application of Impossible Things. She was a civilian engineer working for the Army in Iraq when they hit a roadside bomb, and she had her experience. But as an engineer, it's a very thin, small book. That I've been in this 20 years when I first found it, and I had to take it in sips because it is just done so well to give you different angles on the perspective of experience. Like just a small snippet of that is when she was across in her body, out of her body, she's sharing the information from her human experience with this big spiritual audience. And she said, well, they were all in different varieties of what we call beings, but since she couldn't deal with all that differentness at the moment, she just sort of saw them all as robed spiritual beings, you know, so she transformed them in a sort of, you know, representation point of view so that she could just give you a narrative of what it was like. But she gave you both perspectives in telling it. And so that's just one of those samples of how you have to see things without the human limitation, the boxes we put around things because we put things in terms of vocabulary. And, you know, so whatever word we use, like the word God, you know, it's got a different definition from however that term has entered in a person's life.
Totally.
You know, and it really represents all that is. And for us to argue over belief systems is really not recognizing that we're just coming from different limitations of how we see reality.
Boy, that is so profound. That's absolutely right. Because these are such profound, real experiences. This is not anyone's imagination. They really happen. And people experience them as if they really happen, and they remain forever immediate in your mind. So I know what you mean. Some people are adamant that the reality they experienced must be the only alternate reality you could ever find. So it's difficult. Say the name of the author in the book again, because if you think this is a profound book, I think everyone ought to know about it.
It's Natalie Sudman. That's traditional N-A-T-A-L-I-E-E. Sudman, S-U-D-M-A-N. Application of Impossible Things.
We're talking with Chuck Swedrock, who is a fairly high up person and about to go back on the board of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And one of the things that I know is annoying to him and to everybody who's involved in this work. This is a real phenomenon, and it's one that scientists just try to debunk but otherwise ignore. What are your thoughts on that, Chuck?
Oh, don't get me started. I have been trying for years now to get information about this phenomena into the caregivers' hands. I'm a veteran, and I serve in the Marine Corps, and I'm part of the VA, so I get health services there. And I've gone to the chaplains. I've gone to the mental health folks. In a separate incident, I was helping a neighbor. I went to some cardiologists in the I'm not trying to preach to anybody. I'm saying, but we have this information on these experiences. We have a training video that's available through the IONS website, what healthcare providers need to know. And all too often, they have a wall up, and they can't accept that there's something here that they don't need to do anything about their belief systems. They just need to accept that these are realities to the people that have them, and not send them to a mental health diagnosis or give them psychotropic drugs or whatever, which are just not called for. I mean, the saddest part about this is people who can't share their experiences have to keep it inside. And sometimes that leads to addictions like alcohol or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, there's no release. So we had a man who was 17 or 37 years without talking about his experience until he found an IONS group, and he had been on an alcohol track with all sorts of issues that, you know, when he could finally talk about it, it happened when he was a young boy, and, you know, his mother took him to his pastor, and the pastor said, well, hey, if you didn't see Jesus, it was from the devil, and then what could he do?
That's terrible. I mean, you can wreck someone's life that way.
Yeah, it did, and he saw his deceased pet dog. I mean, what would a boy see?
Right, you know? That's right. The experiences are so carefully tailored to what we need, what will comfort us, what we need to know or to learn to go forward in our lives. And so to have these experiences disrespected by the whole, really, almost the entire professional community is a travesty. And it's going to end. Well, the day will come. But not yet.
It's getting better. But I would say there's two major things. We're in it. IONS needs your help. We're such a small group for such a big message for the world. Two things. Training service providers to understand that these are not mental health issues. And we got pages of documentation from psychiatrists who understand that these are not hallucinations. They're not dying brain effects. And we can document that from the research. 40 years of it, and it's consistent. The second thing, the more important thing, is that people who hear about these experiences and bother to listen to them are transformed in the same ways as experiencers. You don't have to have the negative health effects or whatever of a automobile crash. You can just listen to somebody's experience, and you will be changed, and you will be changed to be, you'll lose your fear of death. I mean, this is research showing this happens, and Ken Ring coined it the benign virus, in that people who hear about this are transformed. They lose their fear of death. They become more altruistic. They less materialistic. They're more service-oriented for others. The life review, they are more in tune with what their behavior is like, you know, in terms of treating others. And the one that's most important, really, is they become more spiritual and less religious or atheistic in their belief system.
Now, is anyone welcome to come and be a member or at least a guest at a meeting of IONS? Because these exist all over the country.
IONS has a no-party line on the interpretation of these experiences. We are neutral. We accept all respectful points of view. Our meetings are predominantly non-experiencers. They could be family members. They could be somebody who knows an experiencer. They can be just somebody who's interested and wants to know more.
So if you're curious,
totally open.
just find your local chapter and just go to a meeting. I've attended many of these meetings, usually as a speaker, and I just love these people. Just wonderful, warm, welcoming people. Now, Chuck, what's your website? How would people reach you?
Well, IANS.org is the important link. On that, there's a find a group link, and people can go look and see if there might be a group within, you know, driving distance or whatever their location. Mine in Arizona is championed by azians.org, azians.org. My email through that is info@azians.org. I want to also throw in a quick bid for people to look at our conference, because that's an incredible experience to be around a collection of people, many of whom have had these experiences. In my meetings, I ask how many experiencers are there, and there'll be some hands go up. And then I'll just wait, and I'll say, you know, everybody's hand should be in the air, because we're all experiencers. Let's stop putting dividing lines between us.
Yes.
It's not non-experiencers versus experiencers. If you've had that coincidence that's too unusual to be a coincidence, that's a spiritual experience, you know, the serendipity or synchronicity that's involved in that is just as important in these experiences all the way through, you know, being out of body or doing something beyond that to the light. It's a spectrum, and everybody's on that spectrum somewhere and has experiences on that spectrum.
We're going to have Chuck back, because I think we've really only scratched the surface. Yeah, this is a major, major topic in this field. We have a lot to learn from it, and I need to have someone who's an expert to teach me, because it's not an area I've really done much studying. So we'll have you back again, Chuck, but I'm so glad you've been with us. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my privilege. Thank you.
I'm really glad you could be with us today. Isn't Chuck fascinating? Please know, remember, never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never will end. You never began. You are eternal by definition. And when you really get that, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. So I hope to really help you understand just how extraordinary you are. Next week, our guest will be my friend and frequent guest, Dr. R. Craig Hogan. Craig is the leader, I think, in the field of organized afterlife research. He's the president and chairman of the Afterlife Research and Education Institute. And frankly, he seems to know everybody and everything. When I have a question, some name I've just heard or some obscure little detail, I just send an email to him and I get a lot of information, and he always knows who the people are. Our topic next week when we talk with Craig is going to be the AREI Symposium being held September 15 to 17 of 2017 in Scottsdale, Arizona. Go to afterlifestudies.org for more information about that. This is shaping up to be an extraordinary meeting with something for everyone. And frankly, it's going to be the best I think we've ever had. So just please listen next week and get a taste, and then see if it's going to be for you. This week, our guest has been Chuck Sweetrock, who heads the chapter of the International Association for Near-Death Studies in Tucson and Mesa, Arizona. By the way, that area of Arizona, I think, is just the one most wonderful spiritual place I've ever been. I spoke in both cities just a couple of months ago, and I have to say, they're 2 hours apart, but still, Chuck manages a weekend where people speak at both of them. He runs it like a Swiss watch. It's extraordinary. His spiritual journey, really triumphal, going through some things that were very painful and difficult to do, I think is an example for all of us. I hear stories somewhat like his all the time, and people do manage to become whole and stronger from having these experiences. Many people are making the journey now out of traditional unsatisfying Christian beliefs and into a deeper spirituality, which is not unchristian. It's the same, except it's stronger, and it's something that we really can hold to. The fact that you are listening now suggests you also may have a part to play, as Chuck does and as I do, in sharing these truths with people. There frankly is no more loving, no more joyous project than this, to at last set people free from ignorance and from fear. So if you are interested in doing more, please reach out to me at robertagrimes.com, and I'll help you figure out where you're supposed to be doing, what you're supposed to be doing, where you're supposed to be going. My nonfiction books, as you know, are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and The Fun of Living Together. They're audiobooks, they're on Amazon, and they're in 33 languages worldwide. If you want to talk about any of my books or really about anything, just contact me through robertagrimes.com. I promise I answer every email. Recent episodes of Seek Reality are available here on the BBM Global Network. Earlier episodes are being broadcast on Green Vision 7 Radio and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, and they're available as podcasts. All forever on iTunes. There's also an app. Just go to look for Seek Reality on the iTunes App Store. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.